Chapter 20, Psychiatric Emergencies. Introduction. As an EMT, you can expect to deal often with patients undergoing a psychological or behavioral crisis. The crisis may be the result of the emergency situation, mental illness, mind-altering substances, stress, or many other causes. This chapter discusses various kinds of psychiatric emergencies and behavioral crises, including those involving overdoses, violent behavior, and mental illness. You will learn how to assess a person who exhibits signs and symptoms of a psychiatric emergency or a behavioral crisis, and what kind of emergency care may be required in these situations. The chapter also covers legal concerns in dealing with disturbed patients. Finally, it describes how to identify and manage a potentially violent patient, including the use of restraints. Myth and reality. Everyone develops some symptoms of mental illness at some point in life, but that does not mean everyone develops mental illness. Perfectly healthy people may have some of the symptoms and signs of mental illness from time to time. Therefore, you should not jump to the conclusion that you are mentally disturbed when you behave in certain ways that are discussed in this chapter. With that said, you also should not jump to the same type of conclusion about a patient in any given situation. The most common misconception about mental illness is that if you are feeling bad or depressed, you must be sick. That is simply untrue. There are many perfectly justifiable reasons for feeling depressed, including divorce, loss of a job, or the death of a relative or friend. For a teenager who just broke up with his girlfriend of 12 months, it is altogether normal to withdraw from ordinary activities and to feel blue. This is a normal reaction to a crisis situation. However, when a person finds that Monday morning blues last until Friday, week after week, he or she may indeed have a mental health problem. Many people believe that all individuals with mental health disorders are dangerous, violent, or otherwise unmanageable. This is also untrue. Only a small percentage of people with mental health problems fall into these categories. As an EMT, however, you may be exposed to a higher proportion of violent patients because you are seeing people who are, by definition, considered to be having an emergency. Otherwise, you probably would not be seeing them. You have been called because family members or friends felt unable to manage the patient by themselves. The problem may be a result of the use or abuse of drugs or alcohol, or the situation could be that the patient has a long history of mental illness and is reacting to a particularly stressful event. Although you cannot determine what has caused a person's crisis, you may be able to predict whether the person will become violent. The ability to predict violence is one of your more important assessment tools. Defining a behavioral crisis. Behavior is what you can see of a person's response to the environment, his or her actions. Sometimes it is obvious what a person is responding to. A person is punched, and he or she runs away or bursts into tears or hits back. Sometimes it is less clear, such as when someone is depressed for very complex emotional and biologic reasons. Most of the time, people respond to the environment in reasonable ways. Over the years, they have learned to adapt to a variety of situations in daily life, including stresses and strains. This is called adjustment. There are times, however, when the stress is so great that the normal ways of adjusting do not work. When this happens, a person's behavior is likely to change, even if only temporarily. The new behavior may not be appropriate or normal. The definition of a behavioral crisis or emergency is any reaction to events that interferes with the activities of daily living or has become unacceptable to the patient, family, or community. For example, when someone experiences an interruption of the daily routine, such as bathing, dressing, and eating, chances are his or her behavior has become a problem. For that person, at that time, a behavioral crisis may exist. If the interruption of daily routine tends to recur on a regular basis, the behavior is also considered a mental health problem. It is then a pattern rather than an isolated incident. For example, a person who experiences a panic attack after having a heart attack is not necessarily mentally ill. Likewise, you would expect a person who is fired from a job to have some sort of reaction, often sadness and depression. These problems are short-term and isolated events. However, when a person reacts with a fit of rage, attacking people and property, or going on a bender for a week, this behavior has gone beyond what society considers appropriate or normal. That person is clearly undergoing a behavioral emergency. Usually, if an abnormal or disturbing pattern of behavior lasts for at least a month, it is regarded as a matter of concern from a mental health standpoint. For example, chronic depression, a persistent feeling of sadness and despair, may be a symptom of a mental or physical disorder. This type of long-term problem would be labeled a mental health disorder. When a psychiatric emergency arises, the patient may show agitation or violence or become a threat to himself, herself, or others. This is more serious than a more typical behavioral crisis that causes inappropriate behavior such as interference with activities of daily living or bizarre behavior. When an immediate threat to the person involved or to others in the immediate area, including family, friends, bystanders, and EMTs, is present, this situation should be considered a psychiatric emergency. For example, a person might respond to the death of a spouse by attempting suicide. On the other hand, although this is a major life disruption, it does not have to involve violence or harm to a person. Disruption can take many forms, e.g., divorce or loss of a job. Not all involve violence, nor are they all psychiatric emergencies. The magnitude of mental health problems. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, at one time or another, 1 in 5 Americans has some type of psychiatric disorder, an illness with psychological or behavioral symptoms that may result in impaired functioning. The mental health system in the United States provides many levels of assistance to people with psychological problems. Common emotional issues, such as marital conflict and parenting issues, can often be resolved with the assistance of a professional counselor. More serious issues, such as clinical depression, are often handled by a psychologist who has special training and preparation for dealing with more complex psychological conditions. Some psychological conditions require the services of a psychiatrist who can prescribe medication for the treatment of the most severe psychological conditions, like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Most psychological problems can be handled through outpatient visits. However, some people require hospitalization in specialized psychiatric units within the hospital. Psychiatric disorders have many possible underlying causes. These include social and situational stress, such as divorce or death of a loved one, psychiatric diseases, such as schizophrenia, physical illnesses, such as diabetic emergencies, chemical problems, such as alcohol or drug use, or biologic disturbances, such as electrolyte imbalances. Sometimes these conditions can be compounded by noncompliance with prescribed medication regimens. Pathology. As an EMT, you are not responsible for diagnosing the underlying cause of a behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency. However, you should know the two basic categories of diagnosis that a physician will use: organic, physical, and functional, psychological. Organic. Organic brain syndrome is a temporary or permanent dysfunction of the brain caused by a disturbance in the physical or physiologic functioning of the brain tissue. Causes of organic brain syndrome include sudden illness, recent trauma to the head, seizure disorders, drug and alcohol intoxication, overdose or withdrawal, and diseases of the brain such as Alzheimer's disease and meningitis. Altered mental status can arise from a low level of blood glucose, lack of oxygen, inadequate blood flow to the brain, and excessive heat or cold. An altered mental status, or a change in the way a person thinks or behaves, may be one indicator of a psychiatric disease, such as bipolar disorder. Functional. A functional disorder is one in which the abnormal operation of an organ cannot be traced to an obvious change in the actual structure or physiology of the organ or organ system. Something has gone wrong, but the root cause cannot be identified as the working of the organ itself. Schizophrenia, anxiety conditions, and depression are good examples of psychiatric disorders. There may be a chemical or physical cause for these disorders, but it is not obvious or well understood. Safe approach to a behavioral crisis. All regular EMT skills, assessment, providing care, patient approach, obtaining the history, and patient communication are used in a behavioral crisis. However, other management techniques also come into play. There is not room in this chapter for a full discussion of these techniques, but you should follow the general guidelines listed in Table 21 to ensure your safety at the scene of a behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency. Patient assessment. Scene size up. Scene safety. The first things for you to consider at the scene of a psychiatric emergency or behavioral crisis are your safety and the patient's response to the environment. Some situations may be more serious than others, and therefore more threatening to your safety. Is the situation unduly dangerous to you and your partner? Do you need immediate law enforcement backup? Should you stage until law enforcement personnel have secured the scene? Does the patient's behavior seem typical or normal for the circumstances, such as hysterical behavior on receiving notice of the sudden death of a loved one? Are there legal issues involved? Crime scene, consent, refusal? For example, a patient who has just been assaulted has good reason to be fearful of other people, including you. Make sure to take appropriate standard precautions. Request any additional resources you may need, law enforcement, additional personnel, early. You can always send them away if they are not needed. Be vigilant and avoid tunnel vision. Mechanism of injury, nature of illness. Determine the mechanism of injury and/or nature of illness. For example, a patient with diabetes may have an altered mental status because of a low glucose level. Primary assessment. Form a general impression. Begin your assessment from the doorway or from a distance. How does the patient appear? Calm, agitated, awake, or sleepy? Begin with an introduction of who you are and let the patient know that you are there to help. Allow the patient to tell you what happened or how he or she feels. Perform a rapid scan. Observe the patient closely. Does the patient answer slowly with single-word answers or rapidly in long, rambling sentences? Is the patient sitting, slumped in a chair, hunched and shuffling around the room, or rigid and standing perfectly still? Is the patient alert and oriented? Use the AVPU, alert to person, place, and day, responsive to verbal stimuli, responsive to pain, unresponsive, scale to check for alertness. To determine orientation, ask the patient, "Where are you?" and "What is the reason you are here?" The answers to these questions will allow you to begin to establish a rapport with the patient. This rapport is critical to the success of your further actions. Almost every situation, medical or trauma, will have some behavioral component. For example, a depressed person may slit his or her wrists, causing traumatic bleeding. A patient experiencing a heart attack may have difficulty breathing and an increased pulse due to anxiety. It is just as important to treat mental illness as it is to treat the medical or traumatic problem. However, the focus of the primary assessment is assessing and treating life threats. Airway and breathing. If your patient is in physical distress, assess the airway to make sure it is patent and adequate. Next, evaluate the patient's breathing. Provide the appropriate interventions based on your assessment findings. Some behavioral situations will involve a compromised airway and inadequate breathing because of a suicide attempt from ingesting a handful of sleeping pills with alcohol. Circulation. Next, you will need to assess the pulse rate, quality, and rhythm. Obtain the systolic and diastolic blood pressures when possible. Assessing a patient's circulation includes an evaluation for the presence of shock and bleeding. Assess the patient's perfusion by evaluating skin color, temperature, and condition. Transport decision. Unless your patient is unstable from a medical problem or trauma, prepare to spend time at the scene with your patient. Depending on your local protocol, there may be a specific facility to which patients with mental problems are transported. History taking. Investigate chief complaint. When a medical patient is conscious, the next step of your assessment is to investigate the chief complaint and then obtain a sample history. At this stage of your assessment, the majority of your time will be spent asking the patient about his or her medical history. In trying to determine the reason for the patient's behavioral state, your assessment should consider three major areas as possible contributors. Is the patient's central nervous system functioning properly? For example, the patient may be experiencing diabetic problems, particularly hypoglycemia. This situation could cause the patient to behave in an unusual or irrational manner. Are hallucinogens or other drugs or alcohol a factor? Does the patient see strange things? Is everything distorted? Do you smell alcohol on the patient's breath? Are psychogenic circumstances, symptoms, or illness caused by mental rather than physical factors involved? These might include the death of a loved one, severe depression, history of mental illness, threats of suicide, or some other major interruption of activities of daily living. Sample history. A complete and careful sample history will be helpful in treating your patient and passing on information to personnel at the receiving facility. You may be able to elicit information not available to the hospital staff. Ask specifically about previous episodes, treatments, hospitalizations, and medications related to behavioral problems. Is Alzheimer's disease or another type of dementia a possible cause? In geriatric patients, consider Alzheimer's disease and dementia as possible causes of abnormal behavior. In these cases, it is essential to obtain information from relatives, friends, or extended care facility staff. Determining the patient's baseline mental status will be essential in guiding your treatment and transport decisions and will also be extremely helpful to hospital personnel. Family, friends, and observers may be of great help in answering these questions. Together with your observations and interaction with the patient, they should provide enough data for you to assess the situation. This assessment has two primary goals: recognizing major threats to life and reducing the stress of the situation as much as possible. Reflective listening is a technique frequently used by mental health professionals to gain insight into a patient's thinking. It involves repeating in question form what the patient has said, encouraging the patient to expand on the thoughts. Although it often requires more time to be effective than is available in an EMS setting, it may be a helpful tool for you to use when other techniques are unsuccessful at gathering the patient's history. Secondary assessment. Physical examinations. In an unconscious medical patient, begin with a full body scan to look for a reason for the unresponsiveness. Follow this rapid check for hidden life threats with a detailed full body scan and obtain a complete set of vital signs. Then, gather what history you can from others. When physically examining a patient with a behavioral emergency, remember to check for track marks indicating drug abuse and for signs of self-mutilation. A physical examination for a behavioral problem may be difficult to perform, but may provide clues to the patient's state of mind and thinking. Some patients welcome physical contact as reassuring, but others may feel acutely threatened. Avoid touching the patient without permission. In fact, this is a good practice for all patients. Sometimes even a patient who is conscious in a behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency will not respond at all to your questions. In those cases, you may be able to tell quite a lot about the patient's emotional state from facial expressions, pulse rate, and respirations. Tears, sweating, and blushing may be significant indicators of state of mind, such as sadness, nervousness, or embarrassment. Also make sure that you look at the patient's eyes. A patient who has a blank gaze or rapidly moving eyes may be experiencing central nervous system dysfunction. A behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency puts tremendous stress on a person's coping mechanisms. The person is actually incapable of responding reasonably to the demands of the environment. This state may be temporary, as in an acute illness like drug-induced hallucinations, or longer-lived, as in a complex chronic mental illness such as schizophrenia. The patient's perception of reality may be compromised or distorted. Vital signs. Obtain vital signs when doing so will not exacerbate your patient's emotional distress. Make every effort to assess blood pressure, pulse, respirations, skin, and pupils. Remember that a behavioral crisis can be caused or precipitated by physiologic problems such as head injuries or diabetic disorders, and they can aggravate pre-existing conditions. Do not forget that the physical person and the emotional person are one. Monitoring devices. When it will not exacerbate your patient's emotional distress, you may use monitoring devices to quantify your patient's oxygenation and circulatory status. It is recommended that you always assess the patient's first blood pressure with a sphygmomanometer, blood pressure cuff, and a stethoscope. A pulse oximetry device, if available, can be used to assess the patient's perfusion status. Reassessment. Never let your guard down. Most patients you are called to treat and transport with emotional complaints pose no danger to you or others on your crew, but it is impossible to determine this while on the scene. Remember that many patients experiencing a behavioral crisis will act spontaneously. Be prepared to intervene quickly. If restraints are necessary, reassess and document the patient's respirations, as well as pulse and motor and sensory function in all restrained extremities, every 5 minutes. Respiratory and circulatory problems have been known to occur in combative patients who are restrained. When available, have additional personnel such as law enforcement officers or firefighters accompany you in the back of the ambulance during transport. This provides you with additional assistance should the patient's behavior change rapidly. Interventions. As much as your heart may go out to an emotionally distressed patient, there often is little you will be able to do for the patient during the short time you will be treating him or her. Your job is to diffuse and control the situation and safely transport your patient to the hospital. Intervene only as much as it takes to accomplish these tasks. Be caring and careful. If you have determined that it is necessary to restrain your patient, release the restraints only if necessary to provide patient care. Communication and documentation. Try to give the receiving hospital advance warning when a patient experiencing a psychiatric emergency is coming in. Many hospitals require extra preparation to ensure that appropriate staff and rooms are available. Report whether restraints will be required when the patient arrives at the hospital. Document thoroughly and carefully. Think about what you are going to write before you write it, so that you can describe what are often confusing scenes as clearly as possible. Because psychiatric emergencies have few or no physical signs, yours may be the only documentation about the patient's distress. Because psychiatric emergencies are fraught also with legal dangers, document everything that occurred on the call, particularly situations that required restraint. When restraints are required to protect you or the patient from harm, include why and what type of restraints were used. This information is essential if the case is reviewed for medico-legal reasons. Acute psychosis. Psychosis is a state of delusion in which the person is out of touch with reality. Affected people live in their own reality of ideas and feelings. To the person experiencing a psychotic episode, the line between their reality and fantasy is blurred. That reality may make patients belligerent and angry toward others. Patients may become silent and withdrawn as they give all their attention to the voices and feelings within. Psychotic episodes occur for many reasons. The use of mind-altering substances is one of the most common causes, and that experience may be limited to the duration of the substance within the body. Other causes include intense stress, delusional disorders, and, more commonly, schizophrenia. Some psychotic episodes last for brief periods. Others last a lifetime. Schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is a complex disorder that is not easily defined or easily treated. The typical onset occurs during early adulthood, with symptoms becoming more prominent over time. Some people diagnosed with schizophrenia display signs during early childhood. Their disease may be associated with brain damage or may have other causes. Other influences thought to contribute to this disorder include genetics and psychological and social influences. Persons with schizophrenia may experience symptoms including delusions, hallucinations, a lack of interest in pleasure, and erratic speech. Dealing with a psychotic patient is difficult. The usual methods of reasoning with a patient are unlikely to be effective because the psychotic person has his or her own rules of logic that may be quite different from non-psychotic thinking. Follow these guidelines in dealing with a psychotic patient. Determine if the situation is a danger to yourself or others. Identify yourself clearly. I'm Gloria. I'm an EMT with the ambulance service, and this is my partner, Stan. We've come to see if we can help. Can you tell us about your problem? Be calm, direct, and straightforward. Your calmness and confidence can do a great deal toward calming the patient. Maintain an emotional distance. Do not touch the patient, and do not be overly friendly or effusively reassuring. Convey a calm attitude. Do not argue. Do not challenge patients regarding the reality of their beliefs or the validity of their perceptions. Do not go along with their delusions simply to humor them, but do not make an issue of the delusions. Talk about real things. Explain what you would like to do. Let's walk downstairs to the ambulance. Involve people the patient trusts, such as family or friends, to gain patient cooperation. Suicide. The single most significant factor that contributes to suicide is depression. Anytime that you encounter an emotionally depressed patient, you must consider the possibility of suicide. The risk factors for suicide are listed in Table 23. It is a common misconception that people who threaten suicide never commit it. This is not correct. Suicide is a cry for help. Threatening suicide is an indication that someone is in a crisis that he or she cannot handle alone. Immediate intervention is necessary. Whether the patient has any of these risk factors, you must be alert to the following warning signs. Does the patient have an air of tearfulness, sadness, deep despair, or hopelessness that suggests depression? Does the patient avoid eye contact, speak slowly or haltingly, and project a sense of vacancy, as if he or she really is not there? Does the patient seem unable to talk about the future? Ask the patient whether he or she has any vacation plans. Suicidal people consider the future so uninteresting that they do not think about it. People who are seriously depressed consider the future so distant that they may not be able to think about it at all. Is there any suggestion of suicide? Even vague suggestions should not be taken lightly, even if presented as a joke. If you think that suicide is a possibility, do not hesitate to bring the subject up. You will not give the patient ideas if you ask directly, "Are you considering suicide?" Does the patient have any specific plans relating to death? Has the patient recently prepared a will, given away significant possessions, or advised close friends what he or she would like done with them? Arrange for a funeral service. These are critical warning signs. Consider also the following additional risk factors for suicide. Are there any unsafe objects in the patient's hands or nearby? For example, a sharp knife, glass, poisons, or gun. Is the environment unsafe? For example, an open window in a high-rise building, a patient standing on a bridge or a precipice. Is there evidence of self-destructive behavior? For example, partially cut wrists, large alcohol or drug intake. Is there an imminent threat to the patient or others? Is there an underlying medical problem? Are there cultural or religious beliefs promoting suicide? Has there been trauma? On the basis of your observations and conversation with the patient, you may need to determine if interventions such as restraints are needed. Remember, a suicidal patient may be homicidal as well. Do not jeopardize your life or the lives of your fellow EMTs. If you have reason to believe that you are in danger, you must obtain police intervention. In the meantime, try not to frighten the patient or make him or her suspicious. Remember, the most important service you can provide for a suicidal patient is compassionate transportation to a medical facility where the patient can receive proper treatment. Agitated delirium. A problem sometimes encountered in an EMS response is agitated delirium. Delirium is a condition of impairment in cognitive function that can present with disorientation, hallucinations, or delusions. Agitation is a behavior that is characterized by restless and irregular physical activity. Although patients experiencing delirium are generally not dangerous, if they exhibit agitated behavior, they may strike out irrationally. One of the most important factors to consider in these cases is your personal safety. The symptoms of agitated delirium may include hyperactive irrational behavior with inattentiveness and possible vivid hallucinations. Common physical symptoms include hypertension, tachycardia, diaphoresis, and dilated pupils. Because hallucinations are erroneous perceptions of reality, the patient may perceive you as a threat. Agitation is recognized as a biologic attempt to release nervous tension and can produce sudden, unpredictable physical actions in your patient. If you think that you can safely approach the patient, be very calm, supportive, and empathetic. Be an active listener by nodding, indicating understanding, and by limiting your interruptions of the patient's comments. It is extremely important to approach the patient slowly and purposefully, and to respect the patient's territory. Limit physical contact with the patient as much as possible. It is also imperative that the patient not be left unattended, unless the situation becomes unsafe for you or your partner. Use careful interviewing to assess the patient's cognitive functioning. Try to indirectly determine the patient's orientation, memory, concentration, and judgment by asking simple questions such as, "When did you first begin to notice these feelings?" Through interviewing, try to determine what the patient is thinking. Are the patient's thoughts disorganized? For example, does the patient begin to answer your question and then drift off only to begin discussing a childhood friend? Is the patient experiencing delusions or hallucinations? Does the patient have any unusual worries or fears? For example, does the patient express anxiety if you go too close to a pile of old newspapers? Pay particular attention to the patient's ability to communicate clearly and make notes on the patient's apparent mood. Is the patient anxious, depressed, elated, extremely happy or joyful, under inappropriate circumstances, or agitated? Pay attention to the patient's appearance, dress, and personal hygiene. If you determine that the patient requires restraint because he or she is a threat to himself or herself or others, make sure you have adequate, well-trained personnel available to help you before approaching the patient. If the patient appears to be experiencing an overdose, take all medication bottles or illegal substances with you to the medical facility. The patient should be transported to a hospital with psychiatric facilities capable of handling the condition. Whenever possible, refrain from using lights and sirens because these sights and sounds may aggravate the patient's condition. Medico-legal considerations. The medical and legal aspects of emergency medical care become more complicated when the patient is undergoing a behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency. Nevertheless, legal problems are greatly reduced with an emotionally disturbed patient who consents to care. Gaining the patient's confidence is, therefore, a critical task for you. Mental incapacity can take many forms: unconsciousness as a result of hypoxia, alcohol, or drugs, temporary but severe stress, and depression. Once you have determined that a patient has impaired mental capacity, you must decide whether he or she requires immediate emergency medical care. A patient in a mentally unstable condition may resist your attempts to provide care. Nevertheless, you must not leave this patient alone. Doing so may result in harm to the patient and expose you to civil action for abandonment or negligence. In such situations, you should request that law enforcement personnel handle the patient. Another reason for seeking law enforcement support is for the patient who resists treatment. Such a patient often threatens EMTs and others. Violent or dangerous people must be taken into custody by law enforcement before emergency care can be rendered. Consent. When a patient is not mentally competent to grant consent for emergency medical care, the law assumes that there is implied consent. For example, the consent of an unconscious patient is implied if life or health is at risk. The law refers to this as the emergency doctrine. Consent is implied because of the necessity for immediate emergency treatment. In a situation that is not immediately life-threatening, emergency medical care or transportation may be delayed until the proper consent is obtained. In cases involving psychiatric emergencies, however, the matter is not always clear-cut. Does a life-threatening emergency exist or not? If you are not sure, you should request the assistance of law enforcement personnel. Limited legal authority. As an EMT, you have limited legal authority to require or force a patient to undergo emergency medical care when no life-threatening emergency exists. Patients have the right to refuse care. However, most states have legal statutes regarding the emergency care of mentally ill and drug-impaired people. These statutory provisions permit law enforcement personnel to place the person in protective custody so that emergency care can be given. You should be familiar with your local and state laws regarding these situations. The typical provision may state that any police officer who has reasonable cause to believe that a person is mentally ill and dangerous to himself, herself, or others, or gravely disabled, may take such person into custody and take or cause such person to be taken to a general hospital for emergency examination. Again, because these provisions vary, you should become familiar with the provisions in your state. The general rule of law is that a competent adult has the right to refuse treatment, even if life-saving care is involved. In psychiatric cases, however, a court of law would probably consider your actions in providing life-saving care to be appropriate, particularly if you have a reasonable belief that the patient would harm himself, herself, or others without your intervention. In addition, a patient who is in any way impaired, whether by mental illness, medical condition, or intoxication, may not be considered competent to refuse treatment or transportation. These situations are among the most perilous you will encounter from a legal standpoint. When in doubt, consult your supervisor, police, or medical control. Always maintain a pessimistic attitude toward your patient's condition. Assume the worst and hope for the best. Err on the side of treatment and transport. It is far easier to defend yourself against charges of battery than it is to justify abandonment. Restraint. Ordinarily, restraint of a person must be ordered by a physician, a court, or a law enforcement officer. If you restrain a person without authority in a non-emergency situation, you expose yourself to a possible lawsuit and to personal danger. Legal actions against you can involve charges of assault, battery, false imprisonment, and violation of civil rights. You may use restraints only to protect yourself or others from bodily harm or to prevent the patient from causing injury to himself or herself. In either case, you may use only reasonable force as necessary to control the patient, something that different courts may define differently. For this reason, you should always consult medical control and contact law enforcement personnel for help before restraining a patient. In fact, you probably should always involve law enforcement personnel if you are called to assist a patient in a severe behavioral crisis or psychiatric emergency. They will provide physical backup in managing the patient and serve as the necessary witnesses and legal authority to restrain the patient. A patient who is restrained by law enforcement personnel is in their custody. Always try to transport a disturbed patient without restraints if possible. Once the decision has been made to restrain a patient, however, you should carry it out quickly. Be aware of standard precautions. If the patient is spitting, place a surgical mask over his or her mouth. Make sure you have adequate help to restrain a patient safely. At least 4 people should be present to carry out the restraint, each being responsible for 1 extremity. Before you begin, discuss the plan of action. As you prepare to restrain the patient, stay outside the patient's range of motion. In subduing a disturbed patient, use the minimum force necessary. You should avoid acts of physical force that may cause injury to the patient. The level of force will vary depending on the following factors. The degree of force that is necessary to keep the patient from injuring himself, herself, and others. A patient's sex, size, strength, and mental status, including the possibility of drug-induced states. Phenylcyclohexylpiperidine, PCP, use may make the patient especially difficult to restrain. The type of abnormal behavior the patient is exhibiting. You should use only restraint devices that have been approved by your state's health department for this purpose. Soft, wide, leather, or cloth restraints are preferred to police-type handcuffs. Acting at the same time, the police officers should secure the patient's extremities with approved equipment. Somebody, preferably you or your partner, should continue to talk to the patient throughout the process. Remember to treat the patient with dignity and respect at all times. Also, monitor the patient for vomiting, airway obstruction, and cardiovascular stability, because the patient cannot fend for himself or herself. Drug or alcohol intoxication may cause violent behavior, but then lead to such physical problems as well. Never place your patient face down, because it is impossible to adequately monitor the patient, and this position may inhibit the breathing of an impaired or exhausted patient. Be careful not to place restraints in such a way that respiration is compromised. Reassess airway and breathing continuously. You should make frequent checks of circulation on all restrained extremities, regardless of patient position. Document the reason for the restraint and the technique that was used. Be especially careful if a combative patient suddenly becomes calm and cooperative. This is the time not to relax, but to secure the situation. The patient may suddenly become combative again and injure someone. Keep in mind that you may use reasonable force to defend yourself against an attack by an emotionally disturbed patient. It is extremely helpful to have and document witnesses in attendance, even during transport, to protect against false accusations. EMTs have been accused of sexual misconduct and other physical abuse in such circumstances. The potentially violent patient. Violent patients make up only a small percentage of the patients undergoing a behavioral or psychiatric crisis. However, the potential for violence is always an important consideration for you. Use the following list of risk factors to assess the level of danger. History. Has the patient previously exhibited hostile, overly aggressive, or violent behavior? Ask people at the scene or request this information from law enforcement personnel or family. Posture. How is the patient sitting or standing? Is the patient tense, rigid, or sitting on the edge of his or her seat? Such physical tension is often a warning signal of impending hostility. The scene. Is the patient holding or near potentially lethal objects such as a knife, gun, glass, poker or bat, or near a window or glass door? Vocal activity. What kind of speech is the patient using? Loud, obscene, erratic, and bizarre speech patterns usually indicate emotional distress. Someone using quiet, ordered speech is not as likely to strike out as someone who is yelling and screaming. Physical activity. The motor activity of a person undergoing a psychiatric crisis may be the most telling factor of all. A patient who has tense muscles, clenched fists, or glaring eyes, is pacing, cannot sit still, or is fiercely protecting personal space requires careful watching. Agitation may predict a quick escalation to violence. Other factors to consider in assessing a patient's potential for violence include the following. Poor impulse control, a history of truancy, fighting, and uncontrollable temper, tattoos, especially those with gang identification, prison tattoos, or statements such as born to kill or born to lose, substance abuse, depression, which accounts for 20% of violent attacks, functional disorder, If the patient says that voices are telling him or her to kill, believe it.